call the Saturday, June 23rd, meeting of the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules to order. For members of the audience who are here for Senate Bill 10, we are awaiting amendments from Legislative Council that will not be ready until this afternoon, so we will not be taking that bill up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. So those of you who were only here for that can go enjoy the sunshine. And I will open a work session on Senate Bill 982A. And Teresa, welcome back to the Elections Committee. And could you...
I think we have an amendment.
Yes, we do, Madam Chair. Committee members, yes. Senate Bill 982A comes to you from the business, back from the floor, from the Business and Labor Committee. The bill does two things. The first is a work product from the Task Force of Telecommunications Law Revision, and it establishes a new definition of telecommunications and telecommunications utility and updates the definition of telecommunications services and statutes to update them to current technology standards and definitions and such used within the industry. The Business and Labor Committee adopted an amendment which incorporated most of the components of Senate Bill 863, which is on its way to the governor's office. So you have in front of you a -A7 amendment, which removes sections 3 through 7, which is the sections that deal with the robocall regulation.
And members, you may remember that we actually passed a Senate bill probably now about a week and a half ago, which did enact restrictions on robocalls. So that bill has gone all the way through the process, so it's no longer needed in this bill. And I will just speak a little bit to the original bill. I know that Representatives Berger and Esquivel heard this bill in its original form, but this redefinition of telecommunications came out of an interim task force that was staffed by the Public Utility Commission. And basically, although there was not consensus about very many of the things that we considered, there was unanimous agreement that we needed to update the definition of telecommunications that is in our law to bring it into the 21st century. And so that is really all this bill does at this point. That was something supported unanimously by all the co-sponsors that you see on the bill that were the legislative members of that task force, as well as all the stakeholders who participated in the task force. So I would commend the bill to you in its original form. And we are in a work session, so...
Madam Chair, did I? You said the original form, so you do not require the A7?
No, we do, because we need the A7s to... This bill became the vehicle for robocalls when we had it in the business.
Madam Chair, I move the -A7 amendments to Senate Bill 982.
Representative Buckley moves the -A7 amendments to Senate Bill 982. Is there discussion on the amendment? Is there objection? Seeing none, amendment is adopted. Representative Buckley.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 982 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Buckley moves Senate Bill 982 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
I have a question for you.
Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Is this the bill that was so controversial about deregulating one side and regulating another side? Okay, because I'm seeing some waters in here, and I'm wondering how it was amended.
This is not that bill, although there were amendments to it also proposed in the Business and Labor Committee to try to turn it That's into that bill, but okay. That is not in here in any way, shape, or form.
Thank you very much.
Okay, further discussion. Erin, please call the roll.
Aye.
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 Chair Rosenbaum.
Aye. Motion carries. And I, as the chief sponsor, I guess, will carry this bill on the floor. Okay. And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 982. And we'll wait for Mr. Stembridge to rejoin us.
Did Representative Thatcher want to hear that bill?
You know, trust me.
It sounds like that down here.
Yeah. Okay, and I'll open a work session on Senate Joint Memorial 9A.
Madam Chair, SJM 9A urges Congress to pass legislation to approve funds for transition for National Guard and reservists to civilian life following active service. It urges Congress to pass legislation requiring the Secretary of Defense to develop a coordinated transition program for the National Guard and to use specific funds for that program.
Thank you for that explanation. And we are in a work session, but I do see Paul Evans from the governor's office in the audience. Would you like to come forward and make a few comments about this?
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, thank you for letting me come forward today and talk about this. And I'll promise to be real brief so everybody can get out in the sunshine. City Joint Memorial 9.
First, please identify yourself for the record.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm Paul Evans. I'm a policy advisor with Governor Kulongoski's office, lifelong resident of Oregon. City Joint Memorial 9 Alpha is really a tool to supplement other reintegration programs that are going on. As you know, right now, we have about 8,400 Oregon National Guards folks. About 7,500 individual mobilizations have occurred in the last 5 years. And right now our National Guard is, well, we need some help. This also applies really a reintegration program that will help reservists as well, but our focus right now is mostly on the National Guard. Recently, Congress has started to take some action on reintegration programs, and Oregon actually is a leader in reintegration. So much so that some of the congressional language recognizes that Oregon's Adjutant General will be a part of some of the policies that they develop at the congressional level. What the memorial in front of you will do is help put a little more pressure on Congress, especially from Oregon that is mostly a National Guard state. As you know, we don't have any active duty bases here. So what we put into the fighter National Guard folks and reservists. The important thing, really the most important thing about reintegration is we have to recognize that it's not only taking care of the folks that have gone and served, it's also keeping our force ready for the future. We hope that the wars will end at some time soon, but there's no guarantee in that, and we still need a ready force. And what we've learned over the last 4 years of experience is that if you can get folks reintegrated into communities and into their families in that first 18 months, you're going to actually solve some long-term problems down the road. And what we need is we need a voice from the legislature to the Congress saying that this is important, and it will help again supplement some of the state policies that we're working on and hopefully help the federal policy develop into a more mature approach. Are there any questions on that?
Thank you. Are there any questions for this witness?
I don't know.
Yes, Representative Escobar.
Madam Chair, right now we don't have any program to transition these people coming out of this situation into when they're released to the public? Do we have any form of transitional programs at this point with the federal government?
Chair Rosenbaum, Representative Esquivel, we actually do have a program in place. We have several years ago, and I'll try to keep this brief, but several years ago when it became apparent that we were going to be putting the National Guard into more of an operational role as opposed to a strategic role, the state of Oregon got folks together from the federal and the state veterans as well as employment and a number of other players and began what we have now, which is the reintegration program. Former Lieutenant Colonel, retired Lieutenant Colonel Scott McCray runs that program. And what it is right now is about twice a year, a number of partners get together to kind of plan out the next year of troops coming back and try to figure out ways for job fairs and for opportunities for veterans assistance and try to make sure that when the troops come home that we at least tell them what's currently in place to help them. What this will do is actually help expand the discussion in terms of not just the programs that are in place to help, but actually trying to build a program that may help that initial 3 month, 4 month when the troop comes back, getting them in the community and helping ease that transition. Kind of a softer landing is what we're trying to get to. But there is a program in place. Oregon is a leader. We actually, our program is seen as a model across the country. It is important to recognize that of the 54 states and territories that have National Guards, there's only 10 that have reintegration programs. Oregon is one of them. But we certainly need more help in putting together a program that is long-term and sustainable.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Yes, follow-up.
I think that that's very important because when I came home, I remember I was discharged and all of a sudden I was out in the population here coming out of a war zone within 3-4 days. And that's quite a shock to the individual coming home as well as going there. So I would strongly recommend that we keep these types of programs in place and especially a 3 to a 6 month term on them.
Chair Rosenbaum, Representative Esquire. On that note, you hit on an important piece that I kind of want to emphasize for National Guard folks. When an active duty person comes out, there's actually generally a 3 or 4 month program where people take terminal leave and a lot of things to kind of get ready to come back nowadays. When a National Guard troop comes back from serving overseas, generally they get 2 or 3 days at the base that they were processed in at, especially on the Army side. And we have a few days in garrison right now because we can do some training dollars to help in that transition. What we're trying to get long term, what Oregon's plan is to try to build in a 2 or 3 month program eventually, so that if we spend 3 months to get troops spun up to go to war, we have 3 months from the spin down when they come back from war. That's really long term where we need to get to, because right now it is better than it was a generation ago, but it's still not as good as it needs to be, and that's what we're trying to do.
Okay, any other questions for Mr. Evans? Okay, thank you very much for your comments. Members, we are in a work session.
Madam Chair? Vice Chair Berger?
Yes. Anybody?
Representative Berger.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I move Senate Joint Memorial 9 and Gross to the floor with a big due pass.
Very large.
Representative Berger moves Senate Joint Memorial 9A to the floor with a due adopt recommendation. Is there discussion?
I'll make a comment when we're vamping for time for Representative Hunt. I think, Madam Chair, if it's all right, I think this is an absolutely essential move for us to make. The resolution is fine, but I do appreciate Mr. Evans' comments about the need to do a 3 month spin down from active duty, and I hope we can reach that goal.
Thank you. Further comments, Representative Berger?
Well, only Representative Hunt is back. I can't add very much to the testimony we've just given. Certainly expert in this issue. It's just that, you know, 3 months to get them ramped up, and then they go to war, which is a life-altering event, and then only 3 months after seems just minimal. I'm glad to hear that we are ahead of other states and at least addressing, at least realizing the problems that we face. I certainly hope that Congress begins to respond.
Further discussion? Okay, Aaron, please call the roll.
Representative
Buckley.
Aye.
Representative
Esquivel.
Aye.
Representative
Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Roland.
Aye.
Representative Thacker.
Aye.
Representative Berger.
Aye.
Chair Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Motion carries. And Representative Esquivel, would you like to carry this on?
Madam Chair, I'd be honored to carry this to the floor.
Thank you very much. We'll have Representative Esquivel carry this on the floor. And I will close the work session on Senate Joint Memorial 9A and open a work session on Senate Bill 665A. And members, this is a work session, but because we have not heard this bill before, I do intend to allow public testimony on it, so I think we have time to do that. And Mr. Stenbridge, would you please tell us what we're looking at here?
Madam Chair, members, Senate Bill 665A expands development allowed with Speedway destination site to include permanent housing. This is the Speedway destination site in Morrill County. Limits the time for the Department of Land Conservation Development to review proposed changes in the local comprehensive plan use regulations. You have two amendments that we've distributed. One is the dash A5, requires mitigation of transportation impacts, and the A8, which replaces the measure. It deletes the proposed permanent housing that authorizes concurrent development of Speedway theme park, 250 road course garage units, 100 units of transition lodging in conjunction with development of the previously authorized major motor speedway in Morrill County. It authorized expansion to the site after it becomes used for sanctioned racing to include additional transient lodging, restaurants, other Speedway commercial uses. That's the dash A8.
Thank you, Mr. Stenbridge. And we have, I see Senator Nelson, who is the chief sponsor of this bill. So would you like to come forward and anybody else that you want to bring with you?
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, for hearing this bill. My name is David Nelson, State Senator from District 29. I represent four counties out of Eastern Oregon, Morrill County, Umatilla, Union in Wallawa, and this particular bill is would be placed in Morrow County, about 8 miles west of Boardman. The two gentlemen next to me, David Allen, is the general counsel for the one of the groups that's interested in doing this, and Gary Neal is the Port of Morrow manager, who is working very closely with all the parties involved. He's a great economic development director for our district. I think this bill is one of the three really big things that we're doing in this session. There's a underground Trans-Pacific fiber optic cable that's coming into our state, and that's not any part of this legislation or anything, but that's something I think that's going to be very significant, because if we can create a point of presence connecting us to the Far East, that's really wonderful. I think the project that's going on down in Coos County, the dredging of the bay down there, I think in a committee I'm on this morning, we're going to hear that bill as part of the capital construction portion. I think that's a significant thing, and I think this bill is very significant for economic development in our part of the country, and there's been a lot of work together with Lane Shirely at the Land Conservation Department and Bob Rindy over there. We've had union members involved, Bob Shiprack. We've had Port of Morrow folks. We've had just about everybody. They've come to this compromise. We started this process in the last session with Senate Bill 1094, and so this is a continuation of it. And from my viewpoint and from the constituents in my area, this is really a huge, huge project that could be very beneficial to us, and we have a lot of community support. So with that, I'll turn it over to the experts here, and if they would introduce themselves. I don't know who wants to go first.
I guess I'll go first.
Sure.
Introduce yourself. Yeah. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, my name is Gary Neal. I'm the general manager of the Port of Morrow. Thanks for the opportunity to at least to comment on this proposed legislation. We're in our part of the state, we're an ag-based economy pretty much, and this opportunity that we're trying to move forward is really a diversity opportunity for diversity of jobs in our region. And I know that tourism industry, which this is related to, is really, you need that destination component to really make it a primary industry for the primary job creation. And the tools that that this bill offers gives us the opportunity to move this to the level necessary for it to be an economically viable diversity in our region of major significance. And I'd be happy to answer any questions, but it's this property that we're talking about on this facility is actually owned by the port, and so we're very supportive, the county's supportive, the cities are supportive, and we need this assistance, and I'd be happy to answer any questions related to that.
Okay, I think we'll hold questions till we've heard from everybody, so please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. My name is David Allen. I'm general counsel for Oregon International Motor Speedway. Appreciate the time here on Saturday morning for this important bill. And before I get started, I would just like to point out there's been a lot of talk about this being a bill that's good for Eastern Oregon. We believe this bill is good for the state of Oregon, and it provides an opportunity for the entire state. I won't go through the details of the Dash 8 amendments, the A8, but I would prefer to have questions from the committee. I can assure you, and I'm hoping Director Shetterly will have an opportunity to speak as well, this represents quite a bit of hard work between my client and the agency. This bill is in completely different form than when it was introduced. We have scaled down the footprint or scope of the project. We have built in very specific triggers about when expanded uses and expansion will be allowed. I have provided just a brief PowerPoint, some slides that I won't bother putting them on a screen. Perhaps the best way to understand what Senate Bill 665 does is to take a look at that first slide where you see a shaded area and a white triangle. That white triangle represents 1,400 acres that Senate Bill 1094 and Morrow County's land use process back in 2002. The proposal at that point was a NASCAR high bank super speedway with a number of tracks packed inside of it. As you can see from the color photo or the rendering that I've provided to you, the project has grown in its aspirations by separating these venues out into various different locations. So what the bill attempts to do is allow us to build the road course with garage units around the course, which will be privately owned, and the course will be open to the public, and it will have a private side of it as well. The course will be designed to sanctioning body specifications such that it could be sanctioned as a test facility and then ultimately capable of holding sanctioned racing. What Senate Bill 665 does is allow us to build the course, the garage units, and a limited 100-unit hotel with an associated restaurant for service of folks that come out and utilize the track. That's all the bill allows, and that's been allowed in the Morrill County process and through an expansion of 1094. This bill just makes it clear that that model is approved. From there, all of the expanded uses that you see on that rendering are dependent upon two things happening. One is a premier sanctioned series event being held at the facility. And two is that the entire project is approved as a master plan, and we go through a traditional post-acknowledgement plan amendment, a PAPA, which will be the standards that the master plan is reviewed on. 665 also puts in criteria of things that the master plan must address with respect to location of facilities, but also with respect to how the master plan will be amended. So in a nutshell, 665 brings us to a project that we believe financially is stable. As the slides point out, the road course and the garage units alone represent potential for over $100 million of investment in Morrill County. That is about half of the biggest tax base in Morrill County, which is the coal fire plant that's coming in at about $220 million right now. So it's obviously important to Morrill County, both to the local government and to the local citizens. The project also enjoys an 8% excise tax, which the voters of Morrill County overwhelmingly approved a year ago, 78% approval rate, where we established a district around the Speedway facility, around the rendering there, and took in properties that were already zoned something other than agricultural. And that 8% tax will then apply to retail sales, pretty much everything other than what the state tells us we can't tax, which is liquor and lottery, I guess. Those revenues are then used to defray the cost of the infrastructure, and as you can tell from the rendering, those costs will be fairly significant. The full build-out of the rendering you're looking at represents about $500 million of infrastructure and improvements and does not include values of inventories or things of that nature that might be in those buildings. So with that, I would welcome any questions from the committee, and thank you again for your time.
Questions for these witnesses?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Allen, if you could help talk me through a couple points here. On page 2 of the dash 8, line 3 mentions residential spaces not intended for overnight use.
Correct.
Can you tell me what that means?
Thank you, Representative Buckley, Chair Rosenbaum. The road course garage units are designed, there'll be CC&Rs that will limit them to three different types of designs, but they will all be the same layout, which will be a ground floor garage and a second story above with, I probably shouldn't call it this, a bachelor pad above. It's got a wet bar, a shower and toilet, and a room for a couch and a television and perhaps a deck coming off, but not intended for overnight use, no bedroom, none of those types of facilities. Basically a place for someone who has their car stored beneath to go shower and clean up after they've been racing for the day and then go from there. We anticipate the park closing every night with locked gates. We don't want people there overnight on the facility.
May I
follow up?
Thank you, Michelle. If I remember from your testimony a moment ago, you mentioned that that this bill pertains to the area immediately surrounding the racetrack with the garage units, but the bill also on the dash 8 on page 2 on to 3 talks about the speedway supporting uses and facilities, including the speedway theme park.
Correct.
So this bill does permit the development of a speedway theme park, which on the rendering you've provided looks like it's, is that right on the river?
Yeah, it's listed as an amusement water park, and that would be part of the Speedway development. Thank you for that question, Representative Buckley. The development along the river, the bill provides to be managed as a destination resort. And whether the theme park would ultimately be part of the destination resort or part of the Speedway site, if you will, would really not make a whole lot of difference in the sense that it would be part of the same master plan. The destination resort would be part of the same master plan. So the theme park is along the river. We're just not clear whether that's going to be part of the destination resort component of it. It depends on criteria for open space requirements primarily.
One more question, Madam Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you very much. Is the development of the destination resort part of this? Is it complying with the current statutes for destination resorts, or is this a new statute for destination resort?
Chair Rosenbaum, Representative Buckley, the destination resort statute will be followed with one minor exception, which is at the time that sanction racing is held, for those of you familiar with destination resort, counties are required to map all eligible lands countywide, and it's a very lengthy process, usually subject to appeal. What the bill says is that the site along the river here can be approved if it meets criteria, siting criteria, without necessity of Morrill County engaging in a countywide mapping process. So that's the only concession on destination resort, which was to allow the site, and we've gone through the criteria and it does qualify. But clearly that would be a local land use application. There'd need to be findings and substantial evidence in the record on that.
Thank you, Michelle.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess, and to anyone can answer it, are the fives and the eights both necessary to be added to this bill?
Representative Roblin, Chair Rosenbaum, the dash fives were from ODOT, and I know Amy Joyce is here, and she can speak to that, I suppose. The dash fives, in Senate Bill 1094, there was a provision that made clear the developer was on the hook for infrastructure costs associated with the development. The dash five simply seeks to make very clear that, and that goes for the expanded development too. That's the way I read the dash five. That's what ODOT. The dash eights basically are the bill at
That's
this
right.
point. Yes. Thank you for that question.
Off-site improvement.
Other questions from committee members? I had a question, and I guess for anybody who wants to answer it, but David, probably for you. I have had people make comments that they see this bill as the Speedway is almost like an excuse to be able to build a much bigger set of destination resort, theme park, all this other stuff, and that those things would be independent of the Speedway, and basically whether or not the Speedway ever became operational, they would be consistent and never go away. Now, I'm reading the language of the bill on page 5 of the amendment, lines 26 through 29, to read that after the major Speedway is developed and used for sanctioned auto racing. So my reading of that language is that the first thing that would have to happen for anything else in this bill to take effect would be that Speedway would have to be constructed and also be used for events. Is that your interpretation of this language?
Chair Rosenbaum, thank you for that question. That's exactly correct. That was the overarching concern from DLCD, which was the expanded uses didn't bother them so long as there was major motor speedway activity going on out there, the sanctioning bodies, the premier high-speed automobile racing. And they made it very clear that without that, they were not in favor of these expanded uses, which we're fine with because the reality is the market won't be there without that type of activity going on the facility as well. There's no sense building these expanded supporting uses. They support, hopefully, the folks that will be coming out there to the Speedway. The expanded uses and the expansion of the footprint are all dependent upon premier high-speed racing being held at the venue.
And I guess following along the same lines, are there other types of entities in existence elsewhere in the country where there is this much development built around a speedway? Or is this a new idea?
Thank you for that question, Chair Rosenbaum. There are several that wish they had. The The NASCAR venues on that circuit pretty much fall into two groups. The old Southern Daytonas and Talladegas, and they are what they are. They're never going to change. And then you've got the new motor speedways with Charlotte, the Kansas Motor Speedway. The Kansas Motor Speedway is the most recently built, and what has developed around that speedway is pretty remarkable. It's called Village West. It's thousands and hundreds of thousands of square feet of commercial and retail space directly across the street from the track. So this builds upon that model. I suppose there's probably not another track that would have a theme park and destination resort so close to the speedway, but certainly some of the associated retail and commercial uses are nationwide growing around these tracks because of the draw. Thank you for that question.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could follow up on page 3, of, when you're talking about the in section 2, lines 22, 23, 24. Can you clarify for me, Mr. John, this means that if there is one event within 5 years, then this development would be allowed to take place, but it could conceivably be that there would be one event, and that would be the last sanctioned premier high-speed automobile racing event at the racetrack? And the racetrack would stand without that sort of activity, but the rest of the development would go forward?
Thank you for that question, Representative Buckley, Chair Rosenbaum. The premier high-speed automobile racing is a series of races, and so when you enter into a sanctioning agreement with these sanctioning bodies, it's not for one race. They don't want to do one race. They will sign a contract commitment of anywhere from 3 to 10, depending on which sanctioning body you're talking about, which venue you have. So clearly it may be one race per year. If IRL only wants to have one race out there per year, that's all we could get. But most of these are series where there are Thursday night race, a Friday night race, a Saturday afternoon race, and then the Big Daddy on Sunday, which is the actual IRL race. So most of these sanctioning bodies that you see on page 2 all are series of races, and that is the intent of the bill, was that there be a series of races there. The language that you quote from Representative Buckley talks about a certificate of occupancy. The track, once it's built, we then have 5 years to attract a sanctioning body premier high-speed event. The intent of the bill is not that we have one race and then we get to build all these goodies and we'll never have another race. As I've described before, the market forces don't support that model, and nor does this bill. I believe this bill requires a presence of racing out there.
I can just follow, Madam Chair?
Yes,
just to clarify, the language of the bill, I do understand the intent, and I think that needs to be the intent. But the language does seem to indicate that that is a possibility that racing could occur in a very short window, and then that level of racing would not be a consistent use of the facilities. Am I incorrect?
There is in the five-year period, the five-year period is the one event will perfect, in other words, not having the bill's provisions lapse. But as I read the bill, the supporting uses, for instance, go to page 5, line 16, section 4, talks about and used as a major motor speedway with sanctioned premier high-speed automobile racing. I don't read that to mean one race. I see that as a continuing condition that the track continue to have high-speed, premier high-speed automobile racing sanctioned at the site for those uses to be allowed.
Thank you.
Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. Is this similar to like a circuit, similar to like the Pro Bowlers Tour or something like that, where they go 3 to 5 years and they come into a community, they do their bowling thing once a year or something like that? Is that what this is?
Representative Esquivel, Chair Rosenbaum, that's I don't know a whole lot about the bowling, and I'm not sure.
Well, we do, because
we
on the tour.
We have a governor that likes to bowl, I know that. I didn't really think I was going to ask about bowling and NASCAR, but it's exactly the same. It is the identical. What we hope is that the lower sanctioning bodies, if you will also choose to have events at the facility. They may not be premier, i.e., IRL or Champ Car or those groups. But one of the markets that we have found is there are a number of, I don't want to call them minor leagues, but car clubs, basically, throughout the Pacific Northwest. People who are into racing have cars of their own, and they are incredibly frustrated by the lack of any venues for them to go race. So we're excited about, again, not premier sanction, but certainly racing going on a regular basis at the facility as these groups come in and reserve the facility. Thank you for that question.
Representative Roebling.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. The way I read it, we have to have a sanctioned event and we can do all the building and the other stuff. The issue that I would have is, are we going to have space if we get the sanctioned event for people to stay? I mean, is there camping and other facilities in and around the area that will allow it? Because knowing how NASCAR is now, there's a wide variety of the people who want to come to those events and what they can afford, you know, with respect to housing and that kind of stuff. And I guess my issue is there space around the area right now to house some of those people?
Representative Roebling, Chair Rosenbaum, thank you for that question. We have transient lodging planned on the rendering there, but you can tell it would come nowhere close to handling even an IRL weekend of 40 or 50, let alone a NASCAR of 80, 90, 100,000 people. We have recognized and we have support from the city of Boardman. When the city of Boardman first heard about this project, they were a bit reluctant when they heard there was going to potentially be residential units. They grew fearful that there would be a Boardman West and everybody would move there and Boardman would die. And what they've done a complete 180 when they really started to understand the project, which is owning commercial land in the city of Boardman right now, if this speedway hits, is going to be a good investment. So we are counting on the cities of Boardman and Arlington to the west, and quite frankly, the travel from the site to Hermiston and the site to Tri-Cities is not all that much more driving time than some of the other venues that you find around the nation. They may be closer to the cities, but the traffic trying to get in, everybody going the same way, makes for a very long night for some of those venues. So we won't be able to satisfy that need on the project site, but we do look forward to partnering with other local opportunities along the Columbia River there. Awesome. Thank you for that question.
Representative Roebling, did you have any other questions?
No, I was just saying, if you want to answer as well, I would love to hear.
I'm sorry. no, Representative Roebling, Chair Rosenbaum. The land use approval that was for the Speedway project also allows for substantial RV facilities at the facility as well, I think in the neighborhood of 5,000 spaces.
That's correct.
So that is an additional assistance.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one more question on the rendering on I-84. Given the issue of traffic and people coming to the facility to because these do attract, you know, tens of thousands of people, the amendment does talk about the transportation system as a mitigated and satisfaction of the Department of Transportation. Is this referring to the interchange off of I-84? It's currently not a cloverleaf. It currently looks like that would there'd be a reasonable expectation that would have to be rebuilt. Am I following that correctly?
Representative Buckley, Chair Rosenbaum, that's exactly right. The road that you're referring to is on the far east of this is called Tower Road, and it's a north-south primarily coal-fired plant, agricultural traffic goes up and down that road. Keep in mind, this project, or at least a speedway project, started back in 2001, and there has been a local land use process that was the genesis then of Senate Bill 1094 that attempted to remedy some of the things that got hung up at the local process and at LUBA. Those findings have very detailed triggers on when traffic improvements need to occur, keeping in mind that all of those traffic impact analysis and all those studies were done on a 145,000-seat arena, having those many people there all at once, and what are we going to do? We have recognized, and I've visited with Ms. Joyce about this, that with the expanded uses, clearly new traffic studies will need to be completed, and we will need to make some decisions about day-in, day-out traffic out there, as opposed to the super event, how you're going to get 100,000 people out of here. There is a proposal, or there is a requirement in the findings to improve a new interchange on Interstate 84 at such time as we go over certain spectator amounts at the venue. That would be the Oregon International Motor Speedway interchange off of 84 that you see coming into what's labeled as the 1.2-mile oval track. There are requirements to widen Tower Road as well as improve the Tower Road interchange as well. One of the reasons we like this model is from a traffic mitigation standpoint, we hope, with other things to do, that not everybody will be arriving and departing at the same time. They may be likely to stay early or come early or stay late, and that will help reduce the traffic concerns as well.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Roblin.
My last question. Where are the closest other NASCAR venues on the West Coast or anywhere?
Thank you for that question, Representative Roblin, Chair Rosenbaum. The closest would be Las Vegas, and it's a fairly new track. There is a track in the San Francisco area called Infineon. It is a road course. It's one of, I think, two road courses that NASCAR has on its circuit, meaning they do something other than just turn left a bunch of times. And there's a track in Los Angeles, the California Speedway, that holds a NASCAR event as well. Those would be the primary NASCAR venues. And then there is a road course, somewhat the style of what we intend to develop in the Salt Lake City area.
Any other questions for this panel? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. I think next we will allow the agencies to make any comments they might have, and that would be the Department of Land Conservation and Development as well as ODOT. Permission to use the visual aid.
Getting in the spirit, Madam Chair. For the record, thank you, Lane Shetterly, Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development, here to first of all express my appreciation for the time that the panel that you just heard spent with us. When this bill came out, we had some serious reservations. It was a heavy super-siting bill that really disregarded much of our traditional land use planning process with provision for public involvement. And we have worked with them until this day, and I can tell you that with the -A8 amendments, we are firmly in the neutral camp on this bill. Our concerns about it have been alleviated. As you know, and let me just explain this, as you know, and I'll say this as much about this bill as it may be signaling for future legislative sessions. The state, and I think legislature as well as the agency and the governor's office, has serious concerns when proposals come in that really establish legislative committees as effectively planning commissions making spot zoning decisions, what's going to go where and how many units on this piece of property. Those are very difficult positions for the agency and the state to be in. We have a process that is intended to address those. In this case, and you heard some of the history, this goes back to an exception in 2002. There was a bill last session that addressed this. We are well down the road in invested policy-wise with this project. And so I think this represents an exception to our general strong concern about particularized local land use development bills. And with the conditions that they have agreed to and that we have established in here, that the big stuff it really is triggered by a bona fide step up in use and investment and economic activity here that truly does make this potentially an element of statewide interest and benefit and concern. We think that there's a good balance here between what the developers need and what may potentially be a benefit to the state, and I think, as Mr. Allen said, not just Eastern Oregon, potentially statewide as well. There is an element of risk and faith on all sides here. Of course, they have to go out and get the investors. The investors have to believe, and I think one event is not going to be enough to draw investors into this. It is going to have to be a contractual kind of arrangement that brings a promise of some repeat activity. We're stepping out, they're stepping out, and again, given the history of this and the conditions that we have managed to establish in the bill, we're comfortable with where we stand today.
Okay, thank you. And Ms. Joyce.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum. Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. We are neutral on the bill and have brought forth the A5 amendment. The point of it is really very simple, to make abundantly clear that the transportation system needs to be in place to support a development of this nature. You heard the proponents talking about events of 60 to 100,000 folks on a single day. At the moment, we have the Tower Road interchange, which is single lane each direction on the overpass. One of the interchanges on this master plan does not today exist. There is a lot of work that would need to be done, and that means a lot of money that needs to be invested. The current ORS states that the developer needs to pay for any mitigation of transportation system, and we just want to make abundantly clear that transportation improvements can't be deferred to later dates. They need to be in place to keep Oregon moving. And that is the point of the A5s.
Okay. Questions for these witnesses? Okay.
Right, thank you
both very much for your testimony.
You want visual aid?
That's good.
And next we'll hear from Daniel Eisenbeiss, and
we'll stick the people there long.
There is anybody you wanted to bring with you? Okay.
Come
forward.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Daniel Eisenbeiss, Legislative Affairs Director for 1000 Friends of Oregon. I've submitted written testimony, so I won't belabor that or some of the points that have already been covered by this legislation. I would ask you to focus in on what this bill says, and not what's already been accomplished by past legislation or exceptions through our land use process. Simply, 1000 Friends of Oregon cannot support this bill as currently drafted or as it would be amended by the A5 and A8 amendments. Even with the amendments, it still supersites essentially a small town and then later what could become a significant city outside of Boardman. Up front, this allows 250 garage residential units, or bachelor pads, as Mr. Allen put it, although the language in the bill says that those units cannot be intended for overnight use. I think that once they're built, there's certainly additional pressure for residential use. If those units are built and a 100-room hotel is built, adjacent commercial uses, they'll remain in place even without attracting major NASCAR or other race events. If one event does occur, this bill allows essentially supersiding of a destination resort. Currently under destination resort statute, 2.5 residential units are allowed for every overnight lodging unit. If we're talking about 60,000 visitors, based on that ratio, quite a few houses could be built in this area outside of our regular planning process that assures citizen involvement and the opportunity for public comment and appeal if something is done incorrectly. It makes sense to 1000 Friends of Oregon to respect the exception that's been granted for a so-called Nebraska-style speedway. Tracks like Daytona and Talladega are obviously doing quite well now. There's more of a history there, but it seems that racing would be viable at this site as allowed under current law, but we shouldn't be, in essence, writing a blank check for future development that's not necessarily truly associated with racing activities, which is what this bill does. As the bill is currently written, it allows development on 15,000 acres of land that's roughly the size of Manhattan in terms of area. Now, under the amendments, that language is removed, but citing a destination resort could take up quite a bit of space too, and this is in an area where quite a bit of irrigated agriculture occurs. We're concerned about conflicts that would be introduced as well, so thank you for your consideration, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for this witness? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 665? It's like we have a young future race car driver.
Cody's coming up here.
Please come forward.
Cody also said wants to be an elected official. Announced that this morning.
Stealing the show. Okay.
Good morning, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. For the record, I am Harlan Levy, here representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. We are very supportive of this bill with the amendments. We think that this bill is good for Oregon. The economic development and the family wage jobs that are going to be created as a result of this development will have a significant impact, not only on that part of the state, but on the whole state. We think that this development will put Oregon on the map. It would be good for ESPN to be out here and showing the races that they are going to be having out there at the Speedway. I'm not going to spend too much time on it. I'm just going to summarize with a few points that you heard this morning. You have a situation here where 78% of the residents of that county voted to tax themselves with a sales tax to pay for this. You have a developer that has done a lot of research and is willing to spend a lot of money, not only on the project, but also on improving the public infrastructure. You have local governments that are very supportive of this. You have no state cost, and you just heard the state agencies involved have no objection. So we see this as a win-win for the state, and we would ask that you pass this bill out with a do-pass recommendation. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Buckley.
Ms. Lady, just as a clarification, the excise tax falls not on the entire county. It falls just within the Speedway Activity District. Is that correct?
Chair Rosenbaum, Representative Buckley, thank you for that clarification. That is my understanding, yes.
I'd be happy to tax them within that district as well.
Let's move the Speedway to Ashland.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. And is there anyone else who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 665? Okay, members, we are in a work session. Representative Berger.
Madam Chair, I move the dash A5 amendments to Senate Bill 665.
Representative Berger moves the dash A5 amendments to Senate Bill 665. Is there discussion on the amendment? Representative Buckley.
Brief comment. The A5 are absolutely essential, and I appreciate ODOT bringing them forth.
Okay.
Can I have to say something?
Yes, Representative Berger.
I have to say something. If we didn't have the A5s, they would keep them there longer, and there would be more economic development in the area. But I appreciate the A5s, and I will vote for
them. I'd be happy about it, though.
And I will vote for them.
Further discussion on the amendment. Is there objection to the amendment? Seeing none, amendment dash 5 is adopted. Representative Berger.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 8 amendments to Senate Bill 665.
Representative Berger moves the dash 8 amendments to Senate Bill 665A. Is there discussion on the amendment? Representative Buckley.
Madam Chair, I'm not comfortable with the dash 8. I'll be voting no on the amendment. I still have concern over residential space is not intended for overnight use. I have concern about the expansion of the Speedway Destination Resort. I know the agencies are comfortable, and I'm glad of that. It is a leap into faith, and a leap of faith being made, and I'm not comfortable with that in terms of basically changing how we're approaching that in terms of public input process. I'll be a no.
And Representative Roplin on the amendment.
Just a quick question to Representative Buckley. Mm-hmm. I always want to say, would you rather have the original bill?
I'd like to pass that on to Reps and a Burger.
Just checking.
Here I yield. Okay. Yes, Mr. Stembridge.
Madam Chair, I would point out that the dash A5 is an amendment to the original bill. The dash A8 replaces the original bill. We can work with legislative council to have the dash A5 put into the replacement, but because the statute is in both, the statute that the A5 amends is in both.
Madam Chair, did I do the wrong order? I took them in numeric order.
Still.
And do you want to say adjacent residential development?
Right. Madam Chair does say there can be.
I would assume that if we adopt both of these amendments, when legislative council reissues this, they will.
Yeah, that was my assumption.
Just wanted to make sure we had that conversation.
On the record, yes. That is the intent.
Right. Further discussion on the dash 8 amendment? And, Aaron, would you please call the roll?
Representative
Escobar.
Aye.
Representative
Hunt. Aye.
Representative
Roblin.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Representative Berger.
Aye.
Senator Buster.
No.
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Berger.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 665 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Berger moves Senate Bill 665A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Roblin.
Should it be on the record here just to say that both the 8s and the 5s will be combined to make sure that we have the bill as intended by the committee?
That's a great point. As amended by the dash 8 and the dash 5 amendments, and we are leaving it to legislative council to resolve any conflicts between the dash 5s and the dash 8s.
Madam Chair, just on
Represented
that point,
by
the dash 5 with the words adjacent residential development, I just have a concern about that. I want to hope to make sure that remains, even though I have questions about what the non, what's that phrase again on page 2, on the 8s, of the residence is not intended for overnight use. I'm hoping that this does not, in some manner, change the bill to allow for overnight use.
Okay, we will note that for the record. Further discussion, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is a good example of some of the things we need to do around the state to help local communities deal with kind of unique development opportunities they've got. Senator Nelson referenced the Coos Bay project is another place where this session will have a unique opportunity to do something similar. The one thing I am just amazed at, if you look at the sheet they gave us that references the ballot measure that was passed last year, I mean, I am just shocked that a ballot measure passed 78% yes vote that includes the words enact an 8% excise tax and impose a lodging and fuel tax. 78% yes. I mean, that really demonstrates the broad community support in Morrow County for this measure, and I'm glad we can give a small boost.
Yes, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just again, to clarify, that it was a citizen of Morrow County taxing other people. And just to clarify on that. I think it's a great move. And just to comment on the bill itself, I do have concerns, and it will be a no, but I do hope, I'm very supportive of the idea of the Speedway happening and it being a tourist attraction for the area. Obviously, the district I come from thrives on tourism. We wouldn't be able to survive without it. So I do hope that this can be developed in a way that does give a great economic boost to the area. I just simply have concerns about the process, making sure there's enough public involvement in it and people know what they're getting into as they develop this project. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your comment. And Representative Roblin.
Yeah, just a short comment, because I think there are comments made about different uses, and you have a group here that's coming in and may have conflicts with agriculture. And I do have to say that conflicts with agriculture and urban development areas are constantly a problem. But in this particular case, if you follow NASCAR, these are not people who complain about farming. These people who are going to be coming there and being there understand farming, a lot of them. The groundswell in this country about NASCAR right now and the opportunity that I think it will give for this part of Oregon are pretty amazing. And I don't think there will be conflicts. The noise it's made in farming causes people a lot of times to not like noise. this group causes noise. I mean, they understand those kinds of things. So, I mean, there's a lot of issues and places that things should be where the local residents understand that. And I think if you were to check with those people, the ballot measure is a good example of that. But if you were to check with them, a lot of those people in that community are probably following what's happening in NASCAR right now. So I think it's one of those things where it can work together, and I don't think it'll be an explosion of taking a lot of farmland. And I think the farmland will be actually an advantage to these kinds of things. It's the kind of thing people expect to see around. So.
Further discussion, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I was just excited to get behind a bill 100% in this committee. Near the end of session, we did not see it happen. And maybe Representative Buckley would entertain maybe a joint venture with the Shakespeare NASCAR.
If I can't comment, we do have the Brammo Motorsports Company, and the legislature passed a bill on the racing activity vehicle. So this bill actually could be very good for the Brammo Motorsports Company, with people buying that Ariel Adam racing car and going to this track and driving it. A great association in Southern Oregon and this racetrack.
And on that note, Aaron, would you please call the roll?
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Roebling.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Representative Berger.
Aye.
Representative Buckley.
No.
Representative Estimal.
Aye.
Chair Rosenbaum.
Aye. Motion carries. And Representative Berger, would you like to carry this?
I would be thrilled to carry this.
Chair.
Yes.
Representative Berger, thank you.
Okay. And so I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 665. And for members of the audience who are interested in Senate Bill 10, we will be coming back at 3 o'clock to deal with Senate Bill 10. We are awaiting amendments from Legislative Council, and the committee is in recess until 3 p.m.